The following is a pre-recorded program.
An analysis of the Israeli elections today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, biblical scholar and cultural commentator, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice for moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Call 866-34-TRUTH to get on The Line of Fire. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown here, delighted to be with you on The Line of Fire. If you've been with me from the beginning of the week, I had said that today we were going to take you into debate that I did with Rabbi Shmuley over 10 years ago, did Jesus die for our sins, debating Isaiah 53. I had failed to realize that this was the week that by the time we got to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we'd have the results of the Israeli election. So we have that ready. God willing, at a time when I'm traveling, maybe an overseas trip or something, we definitely do want to play that for you before the year is out on a Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. But right now, I want to try to explain to you what has happened in the elections. And basically, you'll see a lot of reports, a lot of headlines saying things that Israel is going to the far right, that this is the most dramatically to the right government that Israel's ever had. And there is much truth in that. How concerned should we be? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What about the coalition of religious parties with Prime Minister Netanyahu? How is this going to work out for Israeli security worldwide, the reputation of Israel worldwide, health security of Israel within the land? What about the Palestinians? Well, we'll try to break that down as best as we can. But let me back up and explain again the complexities of voting in Israel. If you're not familiar with this, this is news. If you are, this is a little reminder. So the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli parliament, has a total of 120 seats. And you have right now parties that have won enough votes to get 4 seats in the House, right? So in other words, they have won at least 1/30th of the total vote. So whatever the total vote count is, you divide it, and you have to get at least 1/30th. So that will give you now 4 seats in the House. That's the minimum threshold. How many parties actually won? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. All right. At times it's been higher than this, but it's 10. Now, how do you form a government? You said, oh, no, they voted for Netanyahu, like we voted for Trump or we voted for Biden. No, no, no. That's not how it works. You vote for a party, and the party has a well-known head, in this case, Netanyahu, the head of Likud, for many, many years. And he has already served as the prime minister in Israel for the longest period of time of any prime minister, combined in his two previous reigns, well, where they call him King, Melech, right? But in terms of his two previous times as prime minister, now with his third time, because you can keep running in Israel, okay? This really puts him in a new category in Israel's young history of 70 plus years. But his party, which was the far away winner, got only 32 seats. The next, Yesh Atid, which was centrist, right-leaning, that got 24. Then religious Zionism, which had, I think, 7 seats last election, it doubled to 14, came with a coalition there. And then National Unity, 12. Shas, which is ultra-Orthodox Jewish, 11. UTJ, United Torah Judaism, ultra-Orthodox Jewish, got 8. Yisrael Beitenu, which was a real powerhouse, Russian Jews, they took a big hit, 5 seats. UAL, United Arab List, 5. And then Hadash Tal, I'm not even familiar with that party, 5. And then Labor, which used to be Labor and Likud, like the Republican-Democrat, the two biggest parties, down to 4, barely got in. And Meretz, so Labor is left-leaning, right? Meretz, even further left, that didn't even make it. Right now, it's only 3.1, that didn't even make it. And Balad, which is another Arab party, and which could have influenced the elections, didn't make it either. It's only 3.04. And Habayit HaYehudi, Jewish Home, its name, that not even one, little over 1 seat would have gotten. So because they didn't have a threshold of 4, you didn't get enough, they're not in the government. So the only ones in the government are the ones that got enough votes for 4 seats in the Knesset, okay? You say, all right, now I'm even more confused. How do you form a government? Well, the lead party, so Likud, which got 32, now has to reach out to the others. And they have to say, okay, who's most in harmony with our position? And based on who's most in harmony with our position, can we work together to form a government? So in this case, it's an easy one. It's an easy one because Netanyahu has worked over the years with the ultra-Orthodox parties. So that's 11 and 8. That's 19. Plus his, 32, right? That gives you what? 51. Now you add in religious Zionism, and you get 65. So he's got a strong coalition. Now, what happened in the past, the last government patched together this very, very fragile coalition. The parties that basically were working together were supposed to be centrist right, but then they ended up working with parties that were all around the left. And it was a very shaky coalition. And at a certain point, some of the key parties had people defect and join the other parties. So now the seats have just changed, right? It's, okay, I'm a minister in this party. I'm a be like a congressman here in a party. Now I shift over to the other party. We just shifted the balance of power, right? Because this person has been appointed to this role. Now it just shifted the balance of power. And with that, the government came crashing down. The fragile, fragile coalition, which I didn't know. When it came out, I said, could this be an example of something good? Could this be Israel saying, hey, we're going to work together with all different parties for the common good? Ultimately, because it had to make this coalition, there was too much compromise on too many levels in terms of, no, I'm not going to work with that one, that one, that one. The government collapsed, and Netanyahu now back in power, but with a stronger mandate than he has had. What I want to do is explain first the positive and the negative in broad terms. And I want to go through some articles with you in commentary. Enough of the vote has come in. I'm pre-recording this broadcast, so I'm recording this now Wednesday night at 10:42 p.m. Eastern time. So enough of the vote has come in that I can pretty much say with certainty this is where things are landing, okay? On the one hand, Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu, known as Bibi, that's his nickname, is a very strong and good leader for Israel. He has helped Israel internationally, making alliances with other countries. When he speaks at Congress, multiple standing ovations because he carries himself a certain way, and he is staunchly pro-Israel, meaning he has the back of his nation and he wants to see what is best for Israel as a nation. So no one's going to mistake that. And he's really good on security issues. And that means so much, just like your average American now dealing with inflation and the things that hit you every day and COVID in the last thing and how that hits us every day. Well, Israelis, security, that's a big thing. Can we feel secure? Can we send our kids on a school bus? Can we walk the streets? Can we feel secure? With Netanyahu, there's a strong feeling of that. And he has been a statesman. That's the positive. The negative, on the one hand, he's had his share of scandals. I mean, he's married three times, confessed to adultery years ago. There are current legal cases against him to try to bring him down. And the idea is, well, if he's prime minister, then that's it. Shuts the door on those cases. But there's a lot of controversy surrounding him. He is greatly loved within Israel, and he's greatly hated. Okay, the bigger issue for believers within Israel is that in order for him to be in power, he has to make this coalition with ultra-Orthodox Jews. What do ultra-Orthodox Jews care about? They care about their lives. They care about their priorities. They want government funding so their men can study day and night, study rabbinic literature and study Torah and pray. They do not want their young men fighting in the IDF. That to them would be putting them in a worldly environment and taking them away from Torah study and prayer. And in their view, Torah study and prayer is the very thing that preserves Israel, and it's essential they're doing what they're doing. Not only so, how does it affect believers within Israel? Well, undoubtedly, they will say, okay, in order for us to join your government, they will say, I want this position, this position, this position. And maybe I want control of education to make sure that our schools are properly funded. Or we want to oversee immigration. Why? We want to keep certain people out. People like Mike Brown, Jewish believers. We don't want them here. And it just increases pressure on believers. So while there are believers, Messianic Jews in Israel, who are pro-Netanyahu, not all of them are, but while they are pro-Netanyahu, they always hope, okay, can he form a government without the ultra-Orthodox? Can he come to some coalition with others? Because when the ultra-Orthodox are in power, it is bad for Messianic Jews. It's a negative for Messianic Jews. So I'm quite sure, without talking to my friends in Israel, that they are looking at this with mixed feelings right now, appreciating the good Netanyahu does and the leadership that he brings and the security that he brings. On the other hand, genuinely concerned about where this is going. Now you add in the Religious Zionist Party, and that can even be so nationalistic that the world is going to look at it as anti-Arab, anti-Palestinian, and very, very dangerous in that regard. And I'm going to read some articles about that to you. How far right is it going to go? The reality is that Israel has been steadily moving to the right for the last couple of decades, and it's because of the constant issue of the pressure just on the existence of the Jewish state. It's because of the hostility that they can experience from Palestinian terrorism and the like. It is because when the rubber meets the road, you want to have a country where you feel secure and your borders are secure and you are recognized for who you are and not under constant demonizing and not under constant threat of your very existence. For other reasons, there's a going to the right as well politically. The other side of this is that much of the nation is far left. Not just left, but far left. Years ago, Tel Aviv was voted far away, nothing even close to it, the most gay-friendly city in the world. There's much about Israel that is like left-wing America, and in some cases as radical as or even more radical than. Well, the ultra-Orthodox on the other side, they hotly oppose these things. So, of course, they're all called the homophobic parties. This is going to be a right-wing, anti-Palestinian, homophobic government. That's what's been characterized. And Netanyahu has absolutely been gay-friendly and all of that while still being friendly with religious Jews. I mean, he's a politician. But obviously, policies will swing further to the right. Well, a lot of that is good because Israel swung so far left. And, you know, one lawmaker wanted to argue now, is actually was fighting right before the new government for government funding of sex change surgery. So Israel's dealing with all that. Now you're going to have something swings the other way, but it's a good and a bad. It's not one of these situations where you look at it and say, oh, incredible, Netanyahu is back. Evangelical Christians in America are more united in their love for Prime Minister Netanyahu than your average Israeli. But those that love him on the right love him. Those who hate him on the left hate him. And from my perspective, there is good, but it is mixed. And there is a concern that there can be an unhealthy nationalism that becomes an anti-Arab nationalism and an anti-Palestinian nationalism, which is not good for the Jewish people. And of course, it's not good for the Palestinians. All right, we're just getting started.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on this special Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you as we do an analysis of the Israeli elections. I'm recording this late Wednesday night. I'll be traveling tomorrow during radio. I was planning on playing a debate that I did with Rabbi Shmuley years ago for the Thursday show because of my traveling back from Michigan. We will play that for you, God willing, later in this year on a Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. You will enjoy it. But it's obviously important to explain what's happening with the elections. Of course, because I'm pre-recording, I can't take your calls, but we'll cover as many bases as we can. One quick reminder, if you haven't downloaded my app yet, you don't know what you're missing. Just think of, boom, click your finger, and there, right there, you get all kinds of information on answering Jewish objections to Jesus or watching debates with rabbis, or boom, click on another one in our animated teaching 5-minute videos or latest article or latest Line of Fire broadcast right at your fingertips. So go to Ask Dr. Brown, ASK Dr. Brown Ministries, Ask Dr. Brown Ministries. That's the app on Apple and Android. Make sure you put in the full name, Ask Dr. Brown Ministries. Okay. Let us step back a little bit as we are analyzing the elections here. And let me look at some editorials. Okay. First, a bigger picture. Part of the reason that Israel is leaning more and more to the right has to do with what I mentioned in the last segment, namely the pressures, the threat to Jewish statehood, the threat to Jewish existence. anti-Semitism worldwide, that can contribute. There are numerous things. I'm not a demographic expert on Israel, but there's some obvious things, all right? The reaction to the radicalizing of the left as well. But another thing is very simple. Birth rate. Birth rate. Ultra-Orthodox Jews, which make up between 10 and 15% of the population, they have a very high birth rate, almost 7 children per woman on average. The overall birth rate of Israelis who are secular is a fraction of that. It's just about a quarter of that, a little over a quarter of that. So here's an article from Israel Hayom and Jewish News Syndicate, and it was February 22nd, 2022. All right? Now, from the conservative, from the right-wing government, here's a headline. With overwhelming victory, Netanyahu set to form strong, stable, legitimate right-wing government. So this is looked at as obviously totally positive. I have a clip I looked at earlier. I would have played it for you, incorporated into the broadcast, but there's a lot of background noise in the synagogue with this clip. But there is a famous ultra-Orthodox rabbi in B'nai Brak, which is a famous ultra-Orthodox city in Israel right near Tel Aviv. He's 88 years old, Yitzchak Zilberstein, and he's getting up to pray a public prayer of thanksgiving, Mizmor LeTodah in Hebrew, a public psalm of thanksgiving, thanking God for the election results because their parties made it big and will now be part of the government coalition and therefore have more power and influence in their government. Look, every party wants to have influence. Every party, every group thinks they're advocating for the right thing. But look at this. With 4,709 fewer births recorded in 2020, Israel's birth rate declined 2.6% over the previous year. This was recorded, posted February 22nd of this year, going back to data from 2020. Of the 177,307 children born in 2020, 51.4%, 91,101 were boys, 48.6%, 86,006 were girls. A majority, 73.3%, were born to Jewish women, while 21.7% were born to Muslim women. They have a high birth rate as well, 1.4% to Christian women and 2.4% to Druze women. So the Arab sector, 2.99 children per woman in the Arab sector. And again, because of the many religious Muslims, they'll have a higher birth rate in the sector, not as high. At 6.64 children per woman, Haredi, so ultra-Orthodox women, had the highest fertility rate among Israel's Jewish population compared to 1.96 among secular Jewish women. So it's over three times higher birth rate of religious Jewish women to secular Jewish women. So the population is growing just because of high birth rate, just because these women are having more and more kids. So the ultra-Orthodox population is going to steadily grow, and the overall population, which is more secular, will decline. It's just numbers. It's just the way it works. So you have that factor, and then the radicalizing of elements on the far right, Jewish settlers who have attacked Palestinians, and then the ongoing terrorism and attacks and things like that, that only radicalizes all sides. So let's see. Oh, where do I want to start? Okay. David Horowitz, not the famous conservative spokesman, former radical liberal David Horowitz, but David Horowitz on Times of Israel. This is the headline. Netanyahu, Ben-Gvir, win marks the elevation of Jewish Israel above democratic Israel. Vote shows colossal backlash against Bennett-Lapid coalition, so the last government with its fragile coalition, especially among religious Zionists. It will take an unforeseeable shift in Israeli reality for pendulum to swing back. Now, who is Ben-Gvir? Itamar Ben-Gvir is being savaged as far-right, anti-Arab, anti-Palestinian homophobes. Put the homophobe part aside because he simply could believe that biblical values are right and Torah values are right here. So let's put that aside. How far-right is he? According to the Jerusalem Post, here's an editorial there by the Post itself. This is from August of this year. Itamar Ben-Gvir is the antithesis to Israel's founding fathers. Ben-Gavir is the antithesis of what Israel's founding fathers had in mind when they established the state of Israel and dreamed of coexistence with their Arab neighbors. And according to this, he's dangerous. People need to be aware. According to this article, until recent years, he had a picture up in his office of Baruch Goldstein, who is an ultra-Orthodox Jew, notorious mass murderer, Jewish doctor, who went in the back of a mosque one day, fully weaponized, and started slaughtering Muslims, slaughtered dozens and dozens of them. I mean, what was it, over 40? An absolute horror, tragedy, until they finally were overcome and beaten to death. But in certain radical groups within Israel, ultra-Orthodox or ultra-religious Zionist, he's considered a hero. He's considered a martyr. Just like Palestinian terrorists who blow up a bus with Israeli children, they're considered martyrs and heroes by their radical right element. Well, it's the same with these. So this is the man now. Hey, he's saying, look, we're all brothers. We had elections. We're all brothers. We're going to work together with everyone. But he has now become, even though he's kind of second in command to Bezalel Smotrich in the party and religious Zionists, he's going to have a major role, and he's been like this figure of everyone looking to him, and he's the man. So let me read a little of this essay. A year and a half after the most diverse coalition in Israeli history ousted him from office, the indomitable Benjamin Netanyahu is back. Beyond his age, similar to Trump age, right? At 73, Netanyahu again proved himself the most indefatigable of campaigners, crisscrossing the country in his BB bus, maximizing the resonance of his social media platforms, blitzing sympathetic media outlets with interviews, and exhorting every last potential supporter to come out and vote. He is the ultimate politician. Astute in marshaling his allies, he brokered a merger between Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gavir on the far right, and campaigned among the ultra-Orthodox as well, helping his reliable Shas and United Torah Judaism parties to an unprecedentedly strong showing. Again, those are the Haredi, the ultra-Orthodox parties, those two. He was helped by the strange complacency of Yair Lapid's campaign. He had the second largest party, Yesh Atid, with the now outgoing prime minister significantly failing to mirror Netanyahu in unifying labor and merits on the left. So Netanyahu organized the right together, and Yair Lapid failed to do that with the left. Neglecting to field prominent candidates who might appeal to moderate Orthodox Jews and watching helplessly as the joint list of mainly Arab parties splintered still further, leaving three political groupings competing against each other for their Arab vote. So here's the other irony. If the Arab parties did form a united list and said, okay, let's all work together, easier said than done. You look at how many parties you have on the right. Okay, but if they came together and said, let's all work together, then they could have potentially gotten enough votes to stop this coalition, potentially. I mean, it would be a big shift now, but they couldn't. So Netanyahu basically brings the right together, but at the cost of going further to the right than he has thus far, consolidates that base. Israel's been moving steadily in that direction, campaigns masterfully, and the others, they didn't have the coalition to build, and they didn't have the vision with which to build it. The more faithful shift, marked by Tuesday's vote, Horovitz says, is the elevation of the foundational principle of Israel as a Jewish state above that other foundational principle of Israel as a democratic state. The parties for which those two core values have equal weight, or for which the democratic imperative outweighs our country's Jewish centrality, were soundly beaten, with Israel's founding part of labor on the brink of obliteration and merits at time of writing wiped out. Wow, wow, wow. Labor. Founding party in Israel, left wing, reduced to nothing, barely getting enough votes just to get in with four seats. Meretz, far left, important in bringing about coalition before, out, didn't even get enough. I mean, friends, this is utterly astounding in the shift. And the critics, the fearmongers, are going to be all over this. Now, we don't know which way everything will go in the government, and to what extent it will be moderate, to what extent it will still be working for the best of everyone in Israel. Those who are anti-right are really sounding the alarm. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown continuing to break down the outcome of the Israeli elections. A strong return to power for Benjamin Netanyahu. A strong coalition, a strong far right, religious right coalition. What exactly does it mean? I want to read just a little bit more the opinion of David Horovitz in the Times of Israel. And it's I skipped down to the wrong part. Excuse me, let me get right back to the right part. Here we go. The ultra-Orthodox parties, with their all-male Knesset members, so again, Knesset Israeli parliament, rose. And so too, in particular, did religious Zionism, led by Smotrich, Bezalel Smotrich, who ultimately seeks an Israel run according to the laws of the Torah. And Ben-Gvir, so Itamar Ben-Gvir, who's Otzma Yehudit, so they merged together for religious Zionism, most recent political manifesto advocates the annexation of the biblical Judea and Samaria for an enlarged sovereign Jewish state in which West Bank Palestinians would be denied equal rights. Israel's much criticized electoral system does enable a pretty representative reflection of the electorate's mindset, and the results show an overwhelming backlash against the Bennett-Lapid government, most especially among the religious Zionists who felt betrayed by Naftali Bennett's decision to take their votes into a coalition with Lapid, the left, and Ra'am, and who on Tuesday voted to ensure there could be no repeat of what they saw as that abuse. In other words, those who voted leaning to the right and voted for Naftali Bennett and his party, which is supposed to be a right-leaning religious party, well, in order to get in power, and he comes out of nowhere, he had a small amount of votes, to become prime minister, to share it for a couple of years with Yair Lapid. So what happens with Bennett now is that he says, right, to make this work, we can't work Netanyahu because, you know, we're against him and we don't, people voted for, didn't necessarily want him back in, so we'll make our coalition with these other groups. And it's like, we didn't want you to work with them. We voted for you to be you. We voted for your party to be your party and bring our voice to the table, and you betrayed us. So things shifted further right. And this is what's happening in America. We're having a polarizing further right and further left as each side sees the other as more dangerous. And those in the middle, if they now make an alliance the wrong way, they're considered, stay away from them. So this is what happened. All right. Again, I just want to share some different editorials with you. Haaretz, which is famously left-leaning, one of the oldest publications in Israel, and famously left-leaning, all right? Amos Harel has this editorial. So again, you can expect this to be negative. I'm just going to read the headline in the opening paragraph. After snagging elections, this time Netanyahu might fundamentally change Israeli democracy. The former prime minister hasn't been big on military adventures or changes to the judicial system, but his need to cancel his corruption trial is converging with far-right partners keen to curb the Supreme Court. All right, so he's saying, look, Netanyahu, he wants to get in power. Their corruption trial to try to put him in jail. This way he can stop that whole thing. But he's now made this coalition with the right in order to get in power, and this could fundamentally change the way Israel operates as a nation. So there is a lot of sounding an alarm. This is an article from Foreign Policy, David E. Rosenberg, and this came out October 30th. So this is before this government was formed. But as I'm looking at the picture here where you've got the different faces together, all right, this is, radical right party. They've got pictures of some of the very people in power now, looking at a billboard in Israel. So this is, again, far left in Israel. You'd expect them to be hostile, especially given the nature of the government. What makes Israel's far right different? The religious Zionist party's rise isn't about immigration, crime, or populist economics. Again, religious Zionist party, that's Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, they have gone from 7 seats to 14 and became key kingmakers here. The article claims it's driven by Jewish supremacy and anti-Arab racism. Let's just skip down. after four trips to the voting booth in less than 4 years, because each time they voted, no one could make a government, revote. So the parliament barely had power to, Knesset barely had power to move forward, paralyzed the nation in certain ways. It should come as no surprise that ahead of Israel's November 1st election, there has been little movement in voter sentiment. The lines are again drawn between those who favor former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's return to power and those who are horrified by the prospect, right? So big division there. Polls consistently show the voters delivering yet another deadlock. Well, it shifted right. And Netanyahu ran a better campaign, and it ended up the polls didn't have it right. It shifted further to the right. It says, however, there is one exception to this reenactment of the last few elections, and that is the rise of the far right. So Harel is completely correct about that. The polls show that the alliance known as Religious Zionism, a grouping of the Religious Zionists, Otzma Yehudit, and Noam parties, is set to double the number of seats it controls in the 120-member Knesset to as many as 14 in this week's election. Exactly what happened. That would make this alliance the third largest bloc in the Knesset and ensure it gets a pick of plum cabinet portfolios in the event Netanyahu forms a religious right government, which he did. He's about to, right? So again, you get in, you say, I will join your government and give you a government, because without me, you can't make a government. But I want to be over, let's say, education and over finance, right? And then another one says, okay, I want to be over security issues, military, and I want to be over immigration. And you make your deals. And that's how you do it. The ideas and attitudes, according to Harel, that comprise religious Zionism's platform have hovered on the margins of Israeli politics for a long time. But they had been rejected by the respectable right represented by people like Netanyahu and former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. Its platform includes things like annexation of West Bank settlements, expulsion of asylum seekers, and political control of the judicial system. Oh, that's why the warning that this could fundamentally change the Supreme Court. And excuse me, I keep saying I'm reading from Harel. I've said that three times, I think. This is David Rosenberg in Foreign Policy. Forgive me for that. I set it up correctly, and three times I've said it incorrectly. My profound apologies. Religious Zionism, religious Zionism's roots lie in even more extreme politics than it is peddling to voters today. Itamar Ben-Gvir, the alliance's number one vote-getter, began his career as a follower of the late Rabbi Meir Kahana. So Kahana was no Jews in Israel. His son is influential in Israel today. Kahana Chai party, the Kahana Lives party. But marginalized by others, but getting a more following among more radicalized Jews. All right, so not just the ultra-Orthodox. Many of the ultra-Orthodox don't even believe in the modern state of Israel. They believe that it's getting in the way of Messiah coming and setting things up. But for protection of the Jewish people and for other reasons, they still live there. So they're anti-Zionist in many ways, but they're ultra-Orthodox. But then the religious Zionists, which is a different group, the religious Zionists have gotten more and more radically anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab as the years have gone on. So Itamar Ben-Gvir began his career as a follower of the late Rabbi Meir Kahana. If you want to look up Kahana, K-A-H-A-N-E. And for years, according to this, adorned his living room, I think I said office before, with a picture of Baruch Goldstein, a Kahana follower who massacred 29 Palestinians in a 1994 shooting spree. The Noam party is openly homophobic. Again, I'd be classified as homophobic. You would be if you share biblical values. As the alliance has grown in strength, it has tried to smooth its roughest edges, but never quite disowned them. So that's going to be the real question now. This is going to be the real question, namely, will the far right coming into power now become a little bit more moderate? Itamar Ben-Gvir said, hey, we're all in this together, basically. And I'm even seeing editorials saying, hey, look, the vote's in. This is how Israel voted. Let them govern. Let's see what happens. Okay, let's see where it goes. But the concerns are that it's going to go in a dangerous direction. Here's an article in Jerusalem Post I started to read from before, an editorial August 21st, and it is against Itamar Ben-Gvir. It says he puts on a great show. He constantly smiles in interviews and during public appearances. He jokes with the journalists who interview him and disarms them with his cheerful and friendly approach. And he's become super popular. But don't be mistaken. He is dangerous and people need to be beware. Occasionally, as happened in one interview this week, he shows his true face. When we form the government, he said, I will promote the deportation law, which will deport anyone who acts against the state of Israel or IDF soldiers. Those who throw stones and Molotov cocktails at soldiers will be deported from here, maybe to Europe. They need working hands there. However, he said the same law would not apply to Jews. Instead, he said Jews who throw stones at Arabs would be put in jail in Israel, but would not be deported from the country. In other words, there are two sets of laws in Israel, those for Arabs and those for Jews. This is the interpretation of it. Ben-Gavir is an ardent follower of Koch, so that's the Kahana party, founder Meir Kahana. He is a past leader of the militant group who had a picture of terrorist Baruch Goldstein, the American-born Israeli doctor, on and on, hanging his Hebron home until recently. And according to the investigative program, UVDA was involved in instigating illegal settler activity in the West Bank at illegal outposts and in price tag attacks against Palestinians. So you attack Palestinians for pay. Where does he stand now? I don't know. I don't live in Israel. I don't know people that know him or close to him. Has he become less radical? Are his viewpoints being rightly represented? These things will flesh themselves out. But you can expect all types of hysteria. You can expect all types of major concern. There are legitimate issues to raise and legitimate concerns to have. But the Israeli people have spoken and said, ultimately, this is what we want by voting for these different groups. And it's an interesting thing. So I've talked about concerns, dangers of the right, but let's be candid. Israel is moving further to the right because of the weakness of the left. You know, Elon Musk has said his views haven't changed for years in terms of political issues. He used to be Democrat, but by staying still, because the Democrats have gone so far to the left, he's now a Republican. Similar things, not identical, but similar things have happened in Israel with the left going so far left and in ways even being anti-Israel and what seems to be destructive to your own country and almost embarrassed of your own country, like we'll have on the radical left here. But those who are more moderate now find themselves further and further to the right. So how do we even pray? The way you always pray, God, your best for all the people of Israel. Jew, Arab, Muslim, Christian, your best for Israel, and do what is best for leading all to salvation in your son Jesus the Messiah. Okay, we will be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get on The Line of Fire by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on this last segment of our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday analysis of the Israeli elections. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. I want to read one last editorial to you in a moment. And this is from Jerusalem Post, and it's as conciliatory as you could ask for. Now, it's not Haaretz, which is far left, okay? But Jerusalem Post is not right wing. It's not like, wow, we're, you know, cheering on Netanyahu and cheering on the religious Zionist parties and all of that. So it's very conciliatory, and it's from Jerusalem Post editorial team that's representing them. I want to read that to you in a moment. I tried to pack in a lot. I hope it's been intelligible. I tripped on a couple words and got a couple names wrong here and there. I hope everything's been intelligible and clear, but I've been trying to squeeze a lot in to make this a good learning experience today. I just want to say one more thing about the Noam Party. I was not as familiar with them as, say, Shas or United Torah Judaism, other ultra-Orthodox parties, but Noam, which got a small amount of votes, but as part of the coalition is religious Zionism, so I don't know exactly what Noam would have gotten on its own, but together with Otzma Yehudit joining together as one with religious Zionist party, they got 14 votes, doubled what they had last time, religious Zionist. Okay, so it's a very strong coalition at the moment. But according to Wikipedia, all right, so I'm just going to read this to you, so I understand it's Wikipedia. The party's main goal is to advance policies quote, against LGBT rights and against what its backers call, quote, the destruction of the family. It says this, the party released a video under the comment, an entire country is going through conversion therapy. The time has come to stop it. And it says this in the video, a mother, father, and son go to vote on election day in September, and the family is bombarded with LGBT and reform, so that's left-wing Judaism imagery. Once they reach the voting booth, the mother writes on her voting slip, let my son marry a woman, while the father writes, let my grandson be Jewish. The video was removed by YouTube for violating its terms of use. Oh, isn't this something? So again, as I pointed out, if you and I were running for office and held to our beliefs that marriage is the union of a man and a woman, that God did not intend for a man to be married to a man or a woman to be married to a woman, that kids do best with a mother and father as opposed to with two mothers or two fathers, we'd be branded homophobic, okay? So how is this party known in Israel? Anti-LGBT. The new party is called Noam, a normal people in our land, and has been established by activists connected to the conservative Har Hamor Yeshiva in Jerusalem and its president, Rabbi Tzvi Tal, so ultra-Orthodox Jews. But they joined together with two others to now make the religious Zionist party very strong and part of the Netanyahu coalition. How much power will they have? I don't know. But without necessarily agreeing with how they go about doing certain things, which I do not know, so I can't say either way, I would certainly agree with the values. I would certainly agree it is in Israel's best interest, absolutely in Israel's best interest, to not go the way of LGBTQ activism. And Israel is radically there. The problem is, unless you have the gospel to change people's hearts, unless that's the case, hearts and minds will change, you're going to have the further radicalizing of the left and the further radicalizing of the right, and whoever's in power is going to push the other one down. That is the reality. Now, of course, religious Jews would say, well, what we need to do is bring Jews to Torah, and when they come to Torah, then they will share these values. Either way, there should be a pushback against radical LGBT activism in Israel, especially in the schools. Absolutely. But how you do it, how you bring it to pass without changing people's hearts and minds, that's going to be the challenge. So here's the editorial in Jerusalem Post. Israel voted for Netanyahu, Ben-Gvir, let them govern. This is just acknowledging that in a democracy, the will of the people should be respected, and the election results have made this country's wishes known unequivocally. So here's the editorial in Jerusalem Post. Israel went to the polls on Tuesday and in rather uncharacteristic fashion rendered a clear decision, Benjamin Netanyahu, instead of the endless division and we can't come up with a winner. No hung jury this time, no tie, no waffling. The country wants Netanyahu back as the head of a very right-wing and religious government. The nation has spoken, and now it is time to honor its decision. What does that mean? It means letting Netanyahu form a right-wing, very religious coalition. That is what the people want. That is what they voted for. And this is not meant to say to the country, as a parent might to a misbehaving child, you made your bed, now lie in it. Rather, this is just acknowledging that in a democracy, the will of the people should be respected, and the election results have made this country's wishes known unequivocally. There's that word again. Hey, look, to stop reading for a moment, Joe Biden is my president. I didn't vote for him. I despise some of his policies and where they're going, his pro-abortion stance, his radical trans activist stance, and other things. I despise those policies. I pray for him. He's my president. Some of you absolutely despise Donald Trump's person, and he was your president, whether you voted for him or not. That's the way it works in a democracy, or in our case, in America, in a democratic republic. When the coalition building begins, the editorial continues, there will be calls to bring other parties, such as Benny Gantz's National Unity.